Hello and welcome to the weekly edition of ESG Now, the show that explores how the environment, our society, and corporate governance affects and are affected by our economy. I'm Bentley Kaplan, your host for this episode. On today's show, we're going to be dishing out a double serving of insurance. First, we'll talk to Cody Dong and Sylvain Vansden about the recent decision by State Farm to stop offering new personal or commercial property and casualty insurance in California as the state grapples with growing wildfire risks. And then we'll ask Sylvain about the recent departures of big names like AXA and Munich Re from the Net Zero Insurance Alliance and what that might mean for global net zero efforts. Thanks for sticking around. Let's do this. On the 27th of May, State Farm General Insurance Company, or State Farm, said it would stop taking new applications for any business and personal property and casualty insurance in the state of California. This would not be extending to personal auto insurance, so good news if you're thinking of buying a new car. Now for context, State Farm is the largest provider of property and casualty insurance and auto insurance in the US. In 2022, its net worth was over $130 billion, and the company handled an average of 26,000 claims every day. So this was a big announcement by a big company. In its press release in May, State Farm acknowledged efforts by the state government to mitigate wildfire risks, but stated that the combination of rising construction costs and, quote, rapidly growing catastrophe exposure made it necessary for the company to take these steps to improve its financial strength. And after you hear an announcement like that, a few questions might pop up for you right off the bat, and I promise we'll get to them one by one through this segment. Now, maybe it's not all that surprising to hear that insurers are wanting to throw in the towel in a place like California, where wildfires are relatively frequent, and especially when big ones like the 2018 Camp Fire can cause damage to the tune of billions of dollars. But at the same time, wildfires are not a new phenomenon in California. And maybe naively, I'm left thinking that this is exactly the point of insurance in the first place, to help protect against damages from events that have a degree of predictability. So I put this assumption to Cody Dong out of our Shanghai office. Cody spends a lot of time thinking about ESG and the insurance industry. And as it turned out, State Farm wasn't the only insurer to be hitting the pause button in California.
In fact, another big insurer in the United States, Allstate, also followed State Farm's move. These two insurers blamed catastrophes like wildfires for their decisions. But like you said, wildfire in California is not a new phenomenon. So why now? I think inflation definitely plays a key role. Insurers have to pay for the cost of replacement. And basically that covers reconstruction and repair so that your home is back to a similar shape as before, right? But the construction cost has seen significant rise due to inflation, both from cost of construction and cost of labor points of view. And this rising construction cost in recent years kind of really pushed insurers to the limit.
Okay, so California's wildfires have been getting more intense and more frequent. And no doubt there have been some significant events in recent years. The Camp Fire in 2018 was California's most deadly and destructive in the state's recorded history. And from a policy standpoint, in 2018, California passed a bill that basically stops insurance companies from canceling or not renewing residential insurance policies over a one-year period following a fire-related state of emergency. But for State Farm and Allstate, this increasingly challenging environment related to wildfires kind of blended in with inflation as well. Not only was risk higher, but rebuilding or restoring was suddenly way more costly. Now, inflation may ease off at some point, but looking at models and projections, we can't really say the same thing about wildfires. In truth, we can't really say the same thing about any physical climate hazards. For the most part, most of them are either going to become more intense or more frequent, or both. From Australia's bushfires, to hurricanes along the Gulf Coast, to heat waves in China, and coastal flooding in Japan, data is pointing to more challenging physical risk landscapes. And at a high level, That makes me wonder about how the insurance industry, which is supposed to be figuring out the likelihood of these risks and how to price them, is going to handle these intensifying climate hazards. And one colleague who will be pretty handy at tackling a complex question like this is Sylvain Vansden, out of our Paris office. Prior to joining MSCI, Sylvain had a long experience in the insurance industry, and so he brings a unique perspective to this challenge. To the question of how the industry is squaring off against shifting climate hazards, Sylvain highlighted a key consideration, the timeframes in which these risks are considered in the first place.
What we call physical climate risks in the investment world is natural catastrophes, NatCats in the insurance industry. And the insurers, of course, are well equipped to deal with those hazards. However, climate change obviously is impacting actuarial models on how to mutualize those risks. There is this thing that I sometimes call the curse and the blessing of the insurance market, whereby every year the market gets repriced by reinsurers and insurers. So this annual repricing feature enables insurers to take into account the past year's events, such as natural catastrophes, into next year's pricing. Unfortunately, for some of them, it takes away the ability of them to have a long-term view on the evolution of those trends. Now, of course, that hasn't prevented many insurers from starting to take this long-term view, I would say since several years now. But for some of them, this is a new thing. So, for example, the increasing frequency and intensity of wildfires in California is relatively new. I mean, just a few years. And obviously, what we're seeing is that some insurers need to catch up with the model change.
Right. So insurers have a degree of adaptability or even flexibility here, and that they can reprice risk every year. But as Sylvain sees it, some insurers may have been so focused on this sort of year-to-year cycle that the longer-term shifts in risk landscapes may not always have been part of the day-to-day decision-making. But that sort of approach of living in the moment is rapidly shifting as it becomes clearer that the damage from climate risks in the last 12 months, or the years preceding that, is not always a reliable predictor for the damage that will occur in the next 12 months. And as changing climate hazards become more embedded in the planning of insurance companies, they will need to take decisions accordingly. For State Farm and Allstate, it was about leaving a market altogether, or at least refusing to offer any new policies. And this may have been on the more extreme end of things. Many stakeholders will be wondering, though, if outside of this more drastic step, whether there's a way to make insurance work in a world with escalating climate risk. And to help answer this, I asked Cody about how insurers may be thinking about this challenge and what sort of strategic options they have at their disposal. Here's Cody.
So the insurance business is all about pricing the risk. If risk is high, then insurers can charge higher premiums. But in reality, things aren't that simple because there are other factors at play. One is regulation. In California's case, there are regulations that impose a limit on how much insurers could raise their premiums. So in this sense, insurers' hands are tied in terms of pricing. But even if there are no regulations and insurers can adjust their prices freely, I think the second factor at play is competition. An insurer will find it priced out of the market if their policies are too expensive. The break-even points for different insurers are different. The abilities to properly price any risk, catastrophe risk included, are also very different. And lastly, I think the third factor at play, I'll say, is about where insurers can maximize their ROE or profits. If insuring climate risk in one region is becoming less attractive business-wise, even if it is still profitable, that insurer might deploy the same capital to other regions that may offer more lucrative returns.
Right, so raising premiums is an option with asterisks. It's not always permitted, and if you turn that dial too much, you end up pricing yourself out of the market. And also, because insurance is a business, you don't necessarily want to be operating in markets where your margins are too narrow, where you're keeping fingers crossed that flooding events don't creep into worst-case model scenarios. So under these constraints, what avenues are open to insurance companies if they want to keep operating despite more frequent and severe climate hazards?
What insurers can do, except just leaving a market altogether, obviously, first is to work with policymakers to discuss options, you know, more room to adjust premiums. There are examples of government subsidies as well. The second option insurers could do is to use reinsurance or issue catastrophe bond. So reinsurance transfer risks to other insurance companies. And when you issue a catastrophe bond, it helps transfer risks to the overall financial markets or investors. However, these mechanisms only work if, you know, someone else are willing to take that risk, right? And State Farm actually commented that reinsurance market is tough, actually, at least for the California catastrophe risk market. Last but not least, insurers can decide which markets to enter. It's not all about exiting. For example, hurricanes are moving north each year due to climate change. So residents of northern states of US or even Canada, they may need more homeowner insurance, and that's more insurance demand. When you look at catastrophe models that insurers use, it is often backward-looking and use historical disaster data, but incorporating forward-looking climate models that may provide more insights and could help insurers not only with their risk management, but also with their long-term business planning as well about exiting or entering certain insurance markets.
So Cody and Sylvain have laid out how insurers may be thinking about climate hazards, how climate change may be affecting their businesses. For this next segment, we're going to flip things around by looking at the role that insurers may be inadvertently playing in exacerbating or mitigating climate change through their insurance policies. And the story starts where any good sustainable investment story starts, with an acronym. And this particular acronym is the NZIA, or the Net Zero Insurance Alliance. And the NZIA is a global group of insurers and reinsurers representing a significant percentage of world premium volume. It was convened by the UN in July 2021, and members have committed to, quote, transition their insurance and reinsurance underwriting portfolios to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, consistent with a maximum temperature rise of 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels by 2100 in order to contribute to the implementation of the Paris Agreement on climate change. A bit lengthy, but precise. And the NZIA is actually a bit of a matryoshka doll, an acronym within an acronym, as it falls under the broader GFANZ, or the Global Financial Alliance on Net Zero. The GFANZ was established in April 2021, a few months ahead of the NZIA. And GFANZ is, quote, the world's largest coalition of financial institutions committed to transitioning the global economy to net zero greenhouse gas emissions. And under GFANZ are a bunch of sector-specific alliances, including insurance, for one, but also asset owners, banking, and asset managers. And all of these different alliances were established with a strong commitment to action, to addressing a significant global challenge that calls for global action. Which is why a flurry of big names officially leaving the Net Zero Insurance Alliance might have raised a few eyebrows. Names like Lloyd's of London, Allianz, AXA, Munich Re, and Sompo Holdings. To dig into more about what this might mean in terms of global efforts to mitigate climate change, I asked Sylvain to stick around.
So the Net Zero Insurance Alliance's quick demise is a bit of a surprise, to be honest. Many of its founding members have left, including the chair, AXA. Of course, no one had predicted this back then. But the good news is that most of the insurers who have left the NZIA have stated that they remain committed to their goals, to their climate commitments, the ones that they formed when they joined the alliance. And typically this would mean, one way or another, decarbonizing their insurance portfolios. So it seems that a lot of the founding members and a few other insurers have decided that it makes more sense now to act alone rather than in a collective framework. There are some concerns that have been raised by some policymakers on potential antitrust issues when it comes to the NZIA. It is, however, a significant reversal of the logic that we have seen over the past few years when companies, investors, bankers, and so on have decided to form alliances to tackle issues that are bigger than themselves and that require strength in numbers. This is what led many investors to form alliances over the last years, and especially since the Net Zero Asset Owner Alliance and then GFANZ, the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero.
Okay, so Sylvain points out that yes, there are big names leaving the NZIA. He also mentioned that antitrust concerns raised by policymakers may have something to do with these departures. And a quick internet search will give you an idea of the debate surrounding this topic. But I'll be the first one to tell you that we are not a legal podcast, and we are not about to go on an antitrust side quest. Instead, what's much more interesting for us is what a smaller net zero insurance alliance could mean for global net zero efforts. As Sylvain tells it, even though they are leaving the NZIA, these big insurers are not leaving their climate targets at the door. Many have re-stressed their commitment to a low carbon transition and to meeting net zero ambitions. And in fact, some of these insurers still remain members of the NZAOA, or the Net Zero Asset Owners Alliance, one of the sector alliances that falls under the bigger umbrella of the GFANs. And insurers are also part of this alliance because, sidebar, in addition to providing insurance, insurers also have these big piles of premiums that they either invest themselves or allocate to an investment manager. But let's leave that part out of this particular discussion, because let's face it, we already have enough acronyms to go around. So what gives? Why are we seeing this rapid exit from the NZIA, but not from other alliances that also fall under the GFANs?
That's a really good question. Why the NZIA to this extent? My hypothesis is that there is a lot less insurance capacity in the market than there is investment capacity or financing capacity. So when you lose a shareholder, amongst many others, you can live with this. When you lose your banker, it's a bit more, it's a bigger problem, perhaps, but they might be easily replaced. When you lose your insurer, especially when it comes to highly technical risks, considering that there is not so much insurance capacity on the market, then that really becomes a significant threat to a company's license to operate. And as a case in point, for example, in a previous role, when I was in charge of some investment exclusions, it didn't really trigger much reactions from the companies, from the issuers who were impacted by these exclusions. However, when those exclusions were extended to the insurance business, then it got a lot of clients really worried and the phone started ringing.
The insurance industry essentially underpins operating environments. And that's because the absence of insurance can mean that a particular activity effectively becomes a no-go. In our full interview, Sylvain stressed the importance of insurers as carriers of risk, effectively being able to influence the behavior of both their corporate and personal clients. As Sylvain argues, it's maybe because insurance is such a linchpin of modern economic activities that the NZIA is proving to be a more complex alliance to maintain than the others that fall under the GFANs. A world with a limited pool of insurers means that decisions by just a handful of companies to raise premiums on carbon-intensive assets or to simply decline to offer cover can create massive economic ripples. And because of this potential leverage, many different stakeholders with sometimes competing economic priorities are laser-focused on the decisions and targets of these insurance companies. For those stakeholders rooting for insurers and reinsurers to drive decarbonization, it doesn't sound like a smaller NZIA means that all is lost, even if you do make the case that alliances like these can drive greater accountability. As Cody so clearly highlighted, insurers are not only connected to climate change by insuring activities that might accelerate or mitigate global warming, but also through the hazards that result from climate change. State Farm and Allstate have hit the pause button in California, but other climate hazards will create headaches in other markets. And sure, insurance companies will have three broad options. Specifically, trying to influence regulations governing the industry, or dispersing risk through reinsurance or catastrophe bonds, or looking for opportunities in new markets where physical climate risks weren't prevalent historically. But to tie together points from Sylvain and Cody, insurers using climate models to look forward, beyond year-to-year repricing cycles, may see a fourth option on the horizon. And instead of being a passive party to a rapidly changing climate, and modeling how risk might change, becoming a more active player in mitigating climate change through the powerful lever of insurance, and ultimately toning down the future intensity of physical climate hazards. And that is it for the week. A massive thanks to Cody and Sylvain for their take on the news with an ESG twist. Thank you very much for tuning in. I know that the insurance industry has its diehard fans, but hopefully you got something out of this, even if you happen to not be one of those diehard fans. As always, if you enjoyed this episode or the ESG Now show in general, please drop some stars on your platform of choice and nudge it over to a friend or relative that might enjoy it too. Thanks again, until next time. The MSCI ESG Research podcast is provided by MSCI ESG Research LLC, a registered investment advisor under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940 and a subsidiary of MSCI Inc. Except with respect to any applicable products or services from MSCI ESG Research, neither MSCI nor any of its products or services recommends, endorses, approves, or otherwise expresses any opinion regarding any issuer, securities, financial products or instruments, or trading strategies. And MSCI's products or services are not intended to constitute investment advice or a recommendation to make or refrain from making any kind of investment decision and may not be relied on as such. The analysis discussed should not be taken as an indication or guarantee of any future performance, analysis, forecast, or prediction. The information contained in this recording is not for reproduction in whole or in part without prior written permission from MSCI ESG Research. Issuers mentioned or included in any MSCI ESG Research materials may include MSCI Inc., clients of MSCI or suppliers to MSCI, and may also purchase research or other products or services from MSCI ESG Research. MSCI ESG Research materials, including materials utilized in any MSCI ESG indexes or other products, have not been submitted to nor received approval from the United States Securities and Exchange Commission or any other regulatory body. The information provided here is as is, and the user of the information assumes the entire risk of any use it may make or permit to be made of the information. Thank you.